Thank you, Mr. McKeon. Happy High Sabbath, everybody. It's great to be amongst God's people. I appreciated very much the hymns that we just sang. The theme is of peace and of joy. We worship a great God. We little hand-picked few here and there around the earth, out of the billions on this planet, we've been granted a sneak peek into what God has in mind, what God's plan is for humanity. It's at these feasts, when we gather together, that we get to rehearse some of the milestones, some of the great events, some of the climactic events that God prophesies to occur. In ancient times, the trumpet heralded something new. The trumpet heralded something of a change, whether it was a gathering together, whether it was a calling of the army together, whether it was the call to march, Israel, break camp, because the cloud is moving. This Feast of Trumpets helps us to picture in our minds what God is doing. It helps to bring the vision a little more clearly, to envision the day when Jesus will return to set up His kingdom. We know that this will occur on the heels of a time of great distress on all nations. Today we're going to look at some of what God spoke and revealed through the prophet Habakkuk, and what he has to teach us about this coming time. And the title of this message is Birth Pangs or Labor Pains. Turn with me, please, to Amos chapter 3. I've been in my annual trek through the Scriptures. I think it's interesting to me that on my journey through the Scriptures today, I read Malachi. And the Old Testament is behind me now, and I'm looking forward to the New Testament starting tomorrow in my daily readings. And we are sort of picturing a dramatic change like that today of the age of Jesus, the Christ. Amos chapter 3, and we'll be spending quite a bit of time in these short prophetic books. I don't wish to call them minor prophets because they were God's servants, nothing minor about them. But some of these shorter prophetic books. In Amos chapter 3 and verse 6, we read, "Shall a trumpet be blown in the city and the people not be alarmed, not be afraid? Shall misfortune or evil occur as punishment, and the Eternal has not sent it or caused it?" The trumpet was used to alert people of what was about to occur. And there is a coming judgment, and there is a coming time of distress, of birth pangs. In verse 7, he says that surely the Eternal God will do nothing without revealing His secret to His servants, the prophets, such as Amos, such as Obadiah and Habakkuk and Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Your job and mine is to heed those true prophets, is to pay attention to what they wrote, to pay attention to the warnings. In verse 8, it says, "The lion has roared. Who will not fear?" You've heard what's coming. You hear a lion roaring, you know, okay, things aren't the way they were 5 minutes ago. Something different now. Just like that trumpet blast. "The lion has roared. Who will not fear? The Eternal has spoken. Who can hold back from passing on His message?" You and I in God's church, who send in our tithes, who give offerings so that the gospel will be preached and broadcast to this world, whether they listen or not, the watchman has a responsibility to see what's coming and to give a warning. You and I have an obligation to publish that warning because God has revealed special hidden knowledge to us. Let's turn to John chapter 15. I was jokingly telling my wife I was going to use up all the good scriptures so that all the other speakers today had to. But of course I can't read you the whole Bible, so I can't use up all the good scriptures. In John chapter 15 and verse 15, Jesus was telling his disciples, I don't call you mere servants. You're not here around me to salve my ego and make me feel important and hang on my every word just for my own purposes. He says, I don't call you servants or slaves, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. The servant doesn't know what the master's plan is. He just gets told an instruction, do this. The master doesn't bother telling him why, just do this. And in his own mind, he knows what's going on behind the scenes. He says, but I have called you my friends because I have made known to you everything that I heard from my Father. I have revealed to you everything that I have learned from him. We know that there were many in Jesus' day who heard him speaking with their own ears and, it didn't matter. It bounced off. It didn't penetrate because God wasn't opening their minds at that time. How many people in this age have heard the words over the radio, over the television, over the internet, and not understood, or have not believed and listened and sought out God? How blessed are we, in other words, that we recognize the significance. And our responsibility is here in verse 14, because in verse 15 he calls you are my friends. But in verse 14, not just everybody is a friend of God. You are my friends if you keep on doing the things which I command you to do. You and I have to be striving every day to stay on Jesus' friend list, his roster of friends. Keep our names written in that book of life. Let's turn to Habakkuk. We'll turn to a couple of different passages in Habakkuk is just three chapters long. It's on page 1044, in case you're looking for it. Let's take a look at Habakkuk chapter 1 and verse 2. He says, O Eternal, how long shall I cry for help, and you don't hear? Now, of course, God heard. But where was the action? That's what Habakkuk was waiting for. How long will I cry out to you of the violence, and you will not save? These words that Habakkuk cried out with, you and I could cry out with. Probably every age of man could cry out with these same words. I see all this terrible stuff going on around me. When will you intervene? We know that he's going to intervene. We're here to celebrate and rejoice in the fact that he's going to come and actively and visibly affect everything that goes on. Verse 3, why do you show me iniquity and wrong, and yourself look upon or cause me to see perverseness and trouble? We're surrounded by trouble and crime. For destruction and violence are before me, and there is strife and contentions arise. Again, he saw evil everywhere. You and I, if we look, yes, we see some acts of kindness. We see the love of God's people. But if we look very deeply, we see evil all around us in this world. In verse 4, he says, therefore the law is made slack, and justice and a righteous sentence never go forth. For the hostility of the wicked surrounds the righteous. Therefore justice goes forth perverted. We see the Supreme Court. We see other legal entities sending out perversions of justice. He longed for true justice. Habakkuk longed for the day when God would intervene and he would enforce justice. We need to be on that same page. We need to have that same sort of urgency that justice would arrive. Let's take a look at Isaiah. You might want to keep a bookmark if you have a little ribbon. You might want to put it in Habakkuk. But let's look at Isaiah chapter 59. In Isaiah 59 and verse 4, Again, Isaiah seeing pretty much the same scene. Different town, different individuals, different nationalities maybe. But the same picture. Isaiah 59 verse 4. None calls, none sues for righteousness, but rather for the sake of doing injury to others, to take some undue advantage. No one goes to law honestly and pleads his case in truth. They trust in emptiness, worthlessness, and futility, and they speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth evil. Again, the same sort of thing that Habakkuk was crying out about. We know that it says that God hears, God relishes when his people cry out for the injustice and cry out for his return, for him to send his son to set things right. And he puts those in a book of remembrance. In verse 7 it says, these people's feet run to evil. They make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of lawlessness, and desolation and destruction are in their paths. Again, only God can bring that justice. And we're here today to commemorate that that day is coming. It's not a fable. It's not a vain hope. Verse 8, it says, the way of peace they do not know, and there is no justice or right in their doings. They have made themselves crooked paths. Whoever goes in them does not know peace. Again, people say they want peace. Usually what it means is they want everybody under their control. That'll be peace. When everyone is doing what I say, then that'll be peace. Man claims to want peace, but it's unsolvable. The mystery of how to achieve peace is outside of man's grasp. We had recently the 71st, I think, anniversary of the atomic bombs being dropped in Japan. Those were an attempt at peace, right? They were a human effort to achieve peace. We had a 9/11 commemoration the other morning at my high school where I teach. And we heard some talk of peace. And in our yard, they planted what they call a peace pole in our courtyard there at the high school. And it says, may there be peace on earth. And it's got four sides and it's written in four different languages. We can say the word peace. We can talk about peace. We can say we want peace. But how to get it to happen is beyond our control. We went to an assembly later on in the afternoon last Friday. And they had flags from, I think it was 170 different countries. And there was a woman up on the stage and she'd read the name of a country, Azerbaijan, and whatever, alphabetical order. And after that, she'd say, may peace be in Azerbaijan. And the crowd was supposed to echo that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But does it help? Is it just a vain, you know, some people talk about positive affirmations. If you say it, you'll receive it. Or if you, these people out in the world who don't know God make up, you know, try to dream up ways that they can achieve peace, that they can contribute to peace. And so some of our students were saying it along with them. May there be peace in Azerbaijan. When they walked across with the flag of Israel, I said, may there be peace in Jerusalem, because that's right in the Bible. But otherwise, I just was listening to see how many students were interested in, or, you know, were wanting to follow along. There's a hope for peace, but it's an empty hope. It's completely, we don't know how it's going to come. We don't know if it's going to come. Let's just say we hope it comes, and maybe somehow the universe will hear us, and all our positive thoughts will make those dictators be nice or something. You and I don't have to pin our hopes on some nebulous, frou-frou, non-real attempts at peace. Let's go back to Habakkuk chapter 1 and verse 5. I should have taken my own advice and put a bookmark in it. Habakkuk was seeing distress, or was seeing evil committed in his nation, and he wanted it to end. But God says, well, here's how it's going to end. it's not going to end without some labor pains. Verse 5 of Habakkuk 1, he says, look around you, Habakkuk, among the nations, and see, and be astonished, astounded, for I am putting into effect a work in your days such that you would not believe it if it were told you. For behold, I am rousing up the Chaldeans, a bitter and impetuous nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to take possessions of dwelling places that do not belong to them. So there were barbarous people going to come and bring Israel and Judah low to visit God's just punishment for their neglect of Him, for their neglect of His worship, for their perverting of justice. And it is said of these Chaldeans in verse 11, they sweep by like a wind and pass on, and they load themselves with guilt, as do all men whose own power is their God. There's a coming power who will see itself as the power of God, who will see themselves as answerable to no one, and some punishment will be administered. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 30. These prophets have some low times, but they show tremendous faith, tremendous belief in the reality of what God has promised. In Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7, it says, alas, for that day will be great, so that none will be like it. It will be the time of Jacob's unequaled trouble, but he will be saved out of it. How many times the Eternal prophesied through his prophets, Israel is going to be punished and taken away, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and the other thing is going to happen, but there will be a remnant saved. He will not make a thorough end to his people. You and I are aware of a prophesied time when Israel's descendants, the descendants of the nation of Israel, will be punished because we likewise as countries have failed to acknowledge God, failed to acknowledge His right to define right and wrong. In James chapter 1, we're told to count it all joy when trials arise, because trials are like those birth pangs. You and I have trials in our daily lives. Maybe some of them nobody knows about. Maybe some of them we ask friends to pray about. James chapter 1 and verse 2, consider it utterly joyful, my brethren, whenever you are enveloped in or encounter trials of any sort. We celebrate today and every Sabbath the truth that our Father is going to send His Son to restore justice. We joy in the fact that that great tribulation is going to come, not because we're looking forward to the great tribulation, but because we know it's the labor pains that lead us into the kingdom of Jesus the Christ as He rules on behalf of the Father. There's going to be a lot of sorrow. There's going to be a lot of fear. There's going to be pain. There's going to be death. But death isn't an obstacle to God's plan. Death is nothing. The first death, it's appointed unto all men to die once. That's not an obstacle. But you and I know, we know for a fact, that the end of the process is a perfected group of people. God is working to perfect you. God is working to perfect you and me. And His entire plan encompasses giving every human being an opportunity to reach that perfection under His tutelage. Jeremiah chapter 29. Again, the birth pangs, the labor pains. I'm a great expert in this. I know all about labor. No. No man knows. But I do know things I've heard, and I do know that when a woman is getting to be 38, 39, 40, 41, weeks, like our world is pregnant for Jesus' return, there's an urgency of, yeah, it's going to hurt and it's going to be painful, but I needed to get it over with. We need to get this baby here, get this process to the end so I can hold that baby in. In Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11, it says in verse 10, thus says the Eternal. In verse 11, I know the thoughts and plans that I have for you, says the Eternal. Thoughts and plans for welfare, for your good, and for peace, and not for evil, to give you hope in your final outcome. God calls on His children to cry out, Thy kingdom come. He tells you and I, the ones who trust in Him, that the end result will be that eternal kingdom, which will not be passed on to any other, which will not fade and another kingdom take its place. That joy forevermore. So, again, nobody says, hey, great, labor pains. But at some point, you're like, okay, enough of being pregnant. Let's get this over with. Let's get to the finish line. And that's, in my mind, again, not being terribly familiar with labor pains, there's a good parallel with how you and I need to be urgent for God's kingdom. Let's turn to Psalm chapter 16 as we get close to wrapping up here. Psalm chapter 16 and verse 10. This is David, and this has been attributed as being a prophetic statement about Jesus the Christ, but it is also prophetic about David himself, and about you, and about all of God's saints. In Psalm 16 and verse 10, he says, For you will not abandon me in the grave, nor will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. And again, Holy One can be capitalized, and yes, that referred to Jesus the Christ. But all of God's children, all of God's saints, are holy because He is holy and because we submit to Him, because we love Him and obey Him. Verse 11, You will show me the path of life. In Your presence is fullness of joy, and at Your right hand there are pleasures forevermore. That right hand of God the Father is extended to me and to you today to give us the promised blessings. And that right hand is going to be extended to all those in the future who submit, who choose to live under God's rule. God is extending His hand to you and I today. But we know, again, it's not just you and I in the big picture. It's billions and billions and billions. Let's go back to the book of Habakkuk and we'll finish up there with a few more verses. Because again, Habakkuk started out with a cry of, there's such a lot of evil and treachery amongst your people and you don't intervene. And then he was told, well, I'm sending barbarous peoples. I'm sending some uncaring, unfeeling, murderous peoples against Israel to visit punishment. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 2, he says, The Eternal answered me and said, Write the vision and engrave it so plainly upon tablets that everybody who passes may be able to read it easily and quickly. As they hurry by, God informs. God informs His people of what's coming. Not all listen, but God informs. Verse 3, it says, For the vision is yet for an appointed time, and it hastens to the end, or its fulfillment. It will not deceive or disappoint. It's not, well, here's what's going to happen, and then it doesn't really happen. It will not disappoint. Though it may seem like a while to you. He says, Though it tarries, wait earnestly for it, because it will surely come. it will not be slow on its appointed day. We have to have faith in the promises God gives us. We have to have belief. He's proven to us by all the fulfilled prophecies that he's not playing around, that he does exist, that he is real, and what he says is real. And we can treat it like an ironclad guarantee. Verse 4, he says, look at the proud. His soul is not straight or right within him. But the rigidly just and the uncompromisingly righteous shall live by his faith and in his faithfulness. We can't compromise. The world around us teaches, oh, just compromise. Just bend a little bit. Just settle for less than what God has in mind. We cannot compromise. We've been called to a way of life and by a God who does not compromise. In verses 5 through 20, we can read about some of the devastation that will be caused by these Chaldeans and how they themselves will be dealt with and punished as well for sort of taking such great joy and zeal in tearing up God's people. Just as we know that in the future fulfillment, at that end of that time of trouble, there will be justice restored, and those who have brought modern day Israel low will themselves be dealt with. Because God cares about them. God wants them to understand that He is God. And that He needs to be heeded. In chapter 3, the last chapter of Habakkuk, if we take a look at verse 1, he says, this is a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet, set to wild, enthusiastic, and triumphal music. That's what it says in my Amplified version. A prayer set to wild, enthusiastic, and triumphal music. That should be our attitude today. God triumphs. We're enthusiastic about that. It makes me think of King David jumping and twirling and singing and in a loud voice before the Ark of the Covenant when it was brought into Jerusalem. An attitude of worship, of excitement, and of wholehearted belief. In verse 2, it says, O Eternal, I have heard the report of you and was afraid. O Eternal, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make yourself known. In wrath, earnestly remember love, pity, and mercy. Everything that God does, yeah, sometimes there's blood and guts in it. Love, pity, and mercy are always behind it. Just like we read about Jesus saying to his disciples, you know, I've made known to you, he didn't just make known to them the guts and the gore and the intermediate steps, but the end result, what the final outcome is. Again, love, pity, and mercy, those are what motivate the great God. In verses 3 through 4, we read a little bit about His glory and His majesty. He says, God, approaching from Sinai, came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of His praise. All His brightness was like the sunlight. Rays streamed from His hand, and there, in the sun-like splendor, was the hiding place of His power. Again, this is a song that was set to exciting, triumphal, majestic music, singing of God's glory and majesty. Is that what we think of when we think of God? Do we think of, wow, this is what God's like? In verses 5 through 12, it talks about, again, some punishment aspects of God's displeasure with their iniquity and with their sin, and how that will be repaid. And in verse 13, we read, you went forth and have come for the salvation of your people, for the deliverance and victory of your anointed people Israel. You smote the head of the house of the wicked, laying bare the foundation, even to the neck. God coming to save His people, to deliver His people, to leave them a remnant, to leave us a remnant. In verse 14, he says, you pierced with His own arrows the head of the enemy's hordes. They came out as a whirlwind to scatter the people rejoicing as if to devour the poor secretly. Again, sort of a answerable to no one, just a flood of, you know, everything is, we can take whatever we can take, and it's every man for himself, not recognizing God. In verse 16, Habakkuk says, I heard, and my whole inner self trembled. My lips quivered at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones, and under me, or down to my feet, he says, I tremble. That awe, that reverence for what God is, what God can do. And again, not out of any motive except for, in the end, love, pity, mercy. But again, sort of a quaking at the knees and shaking from adrenaline. I will wait quietly for the day of trouble and distress when there shall come up against my people him who is about to invade and oppress them. So again, that reverence that he expressed, the fact that he had awe for the eternal. Because again, as we read in verse 18, he says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. He just gets done talking about, wow, these people are coming and they're going to just cut Israel down. And in verse 18, he says, yet I will rejoice in the eternal. I will exult in the victorious God of my salvation. Because, again, God is about salvation. Yeah, there's some steps in between here and there. There are those birth pangs before the delivery. But God is about salvation. His purpose is to save. Verse 19, the final verse of this short book, he says, the eternal God is my strength, my personal bravery, and my invincible army. Do we see God as our invincible army? If we are with God, we are with an invincible army. He makes my feet like deer's feet, and he will make me to walk rather than stand still in terror. He will make me to walk and to make spiritual progress upon my high places. With God, all things are possible. With God and his invincible help, nothing stands in your way and in my way. So in closing, I would just like us to encourage us all to read the prophecies of Habakkuk and Amos and Zephaniah and Malachi and all of God's prophets. Notice their fervent belief. They fervently believed. They had talked with great zeal. Notice their willingness to weather persecution. They didn't, they get thrown in a pit. Speaking the truth to the king, he throws you in a pit full of mud and muck and throws you moldy bread, and willingness to suffer persecution in service to God. Let's all ask God to give us fervor like the kind displayed in Habakkuk's prayer. Our God is real. Our God is sending his son to set everything back upright. There will be the labor pains before the coming of the rule of the eternal, but they will soon be forgotten because of the joy that his righteous reign will bring.